Well, let me start by congratulating Veronica and Ashley and United Workers, with especially the victory at Camden Yards more than a couple of years ago, built, of course, on a wider statewide living wage victory in Maryland. I don't think that David Zirin's comment was an exaggeration in any way in the nation, the comment that you saw. Certainly, I know for myself, I used to live in Baltimore more than 20 years ago now, but I heard very quickly about the victories, not only at the state level with the living wage, but the Camden Yards victory. And these were events that really did resonate around a lot of other activist groups in the country. So that's the first thing. The other thing is, I'm not sure how much of any importance I can really say. A lot of the things that I would distill out of maybe the more theoretical work that I've done on space and gentrification and the making of urban places is already incorporated in the presentation that Veronica gave. I had this experience once. I wrote, it took me about 3 years, actually in Baltimore, to struggle away writing out a theory of gentrification in the middle of Baltimore, and then I opened the newspaper one morning to find that Gary Trudeau in Doonesbury cartoon had got it in four frames. You know, and I'd been working for 3 years as an academic trying to figure this out, and Gary Trudeau gets it in four frames. So I feel a bit like that tonight. One of the things I was going to say, though, and I think that is already incorporated in the United Workers strategy, is what it sounds fancy, but it's fairly simple, is the notion of jumping scales. That in political struggles, so often, if you cap the kind of struggle that you want at one level or at one scale, you can get defeated in a lot of ways. You can get defeated by actually getting half of what you want, but because that's all you've asked for and you got a half of it, the struggle dies away. Or you can get defeated by simply the refusal to grant anything, in which case you've got disillusioned membership and you don't know where to go with it and so on. The question of jumping scales is always about moving. It's about permanent shift in the scale of political demands and so on. And it seems to me that's exactly the point of the jump from Phillips Seafood, demands of Phillips Seafood, which I from even when I was there in the early 1980s, they were notorious in the new Inner Harbour area. The demands on Phillips Seafood, who, when they then came back with a threatening response, you go, well, okay, screw that. Now we'll take on the developers, right? That's the question of jumping scale. It's territorial, it's geographical, it's spatial, but it's also social and political. It's all of that all at the one time. And I have to say, I kind of learned that lesson. I mean, I kind of knew it slightly intellectually, but I really learned it in the later 1980s around Tompkins Square Park here in New York, where a lot of the anti-gentrification struggles focused. As some of you will know or maybe even remember, folks, homeless folks, housing activists, squatters, a number of other folk, took Tompkins Square Park when the police threatened to take it back, put on a curfew. They took Tompkins Square Park, and effectively for 3 years, they controlled the park from 1988 to 1991. And for a while, it was a kind of police no-go zone. I mean, this was serious stuff. And when the police finally cleared people out, they sent in half-track tanks to clear out some squatters, for example. Now, in the middle of that struggle, which in the end was defeated, but it wasn't an entire defeat. One of the ways in which the defeat took place is precisely that people weren't organized enough to jump scale, as it were. And one of the jokes, I guess, that we started talking about was, you know, the park is 10 acres in size. It's not very big. And you go, well, you know, I'm not sure socialism in one park is really going to work here. You know, you've got to kind of expand out from one park. You've got to jump scale. What about the neighborhood? What about the city? You know? So that notion of jumping scale, I think, is important. But as I say, it seems to be already sort of intuitively incorporated in the kind of strategies that United Workers are working with. The second thing I wanted to really just mention as well is that other struggles have kind of foundered, I think, when the demands have been very narrow, and especially economic demands, and especially economic demands around wages. You know, you just demand a wage increase, and maybe you get half of it, and then, you know, the struggle goes to sleep, and so on. And there was actually a very good historical dissertation done on what we would call labour geography in the 1990s at Rutgers University by this woman, Leila Vural. And what she did was to go back and look at the International Ladies Garment Workers Union in the 1920s through about the 1950s. And she concluded, you know, from all of the work and all of the research she did, that that union was at its most radical, not just when it was emphasizing workplace kinds of issues, but when it was very clear that those workplace issues were connected to issues at home and issues of, you know, how you live on a day-to-day basis, not just the workplace experience, which let's assume is like 8 hours out of a 24-hour day. And in particular, what the ILGWU in this period did was to get involved in building housing for workers and managing housing. And some of those buildings are still around in New York City. They got involved in worker education. And it was when that connection between the workplace, in a particular, in a narrower sense, and a broader kind of sense of what it was necessary to live and have a good life, when those things were put together, that's when the union was at its most radical. And it seems to me, too, that that's exactly what we're getting here with the United Workers, that what's going on is not just a demand for a living wage, which, of course, is a baseline demand in this context, but also a demand around healthcare and needs for healthcare, a demand around education for workers involved in the Inner Harbor. I'm going to add another possible area that might be useful to look at, and that's, and Veronica, I think you alluded to this anyway, it is the question of gentrification and housing, broadly conceived. I was actually in Baltimore when the Inner Harbor was beginning to be constructed, and the language then, when we were talking about the possibility of people being displaced, the argument then was always, well, but it's a bunch of wharfs. You know, it's old seaport facilities, infrastructure. They're no longer used. There's no housing there, so nobody's going to be displaced. And of course, the argument that came up among activists and others as well was, you know, you're right about the wharfs. You're right about the very narrow particular place of what's now the Inner Harbor land. But what about the economic effects in the areas around? What happens to rents to the east, to the working class housing to the east, to the working class housing to the south in Fells Point, less so to the west, which is a bit more corporate downtown buildings and so on, but to the east and the south in particular. And that was written off. And of course, exactly that scenario has come to pass. The gentrification has not only worked through the market, but the planning process, using the Inner Harbor as a complete magnet and anchor for the gentrification in a much larger scale, has now led to the construction of all sorts of new condominium buildings and other related kinds of buildings that have helped to kind of gentrify this central part of Baltimore. So it may be too much for this campaign, but the idea of housing being in there along with education and health actually makes some sense for some point in the future. The other comment I really wanted to make is a bit broader, and it has to do with the broader social, economic, particularly context that we're in right now. We've just been through what, at the very best, you can say, is the worst depression since the Great Depression of the late 20s and 30s. In fact, by some measures by economists, this depression was in ways worse than the 20s and 30s. We're still in it, despite all of the language about green shoots, about the economy coming back. Unemployment is still going up. Jobs are not being created. There's been a blip up in retail sales, largely due to the stimulus that's come out from the government and so on. But increasingly, even in the last few weeks, you see, you know, mainstream economists like Paul Krugman in the New York Times yesterday saying, listen, this is a blip. We're now going to head into a much deeper kind of recession or depression. and things are going to get a lot tougher for a lot of people than they were in 2007, 2008. Now, it's very hard to predict what an economy will do, so and I'm not an economist, and I'm not going to sit on that as a prediction, but I'm reading the economists who are prepared to make some of these kinds of predictions. And in that context, it seems to me that it becomes an even more urgent question about what kinds of demands, what kinds of strategies we have. And there's a lot on the left, especially a lot of folks who I think supported Obama, and quite reasonably so, as an alternative to the ghoulish Bush administration. There's a lot of folk on the left who thought, well, you know, what we need to go back to is a New Deal, you know, something like the response to the Depression in the 1930s. And I've always been a bit skeptical of that, and I'm skeptical for a number of reasons. I mean, as I say, housing is one of the things that I study. And the New Deal wasn't so good a deal for a lot of people, in housing especially. The New Deal initiatives that were put in were explicitly aimed at white, upper working class, stable working class, or lower middle class folks, and explicitly aimed too at developing the suburbs. And if you look at the mortgage insurance program that was put in place in 1933 under the FHA, the Federal Housing Authority, between 1933 and 1968, something like 600,000 mortgages were insured in that period by the FHA. And the number of mortgages that went to African American families was fewer than 10 in that list. So the New Deal wasn't such a great deal, one. Second, and this is the most important thing, Roosevelt didn't come up with the New Deal in the 30s because he was a nice guy, you know, a patrician capitalist of his own. Roosevelt came up with the New Deal because people were on the streets. Unions were being organized. Socialists were on the streets. Workers were striking. There were demonstrations around other, you know, living conditions. The Communist Party was building. All of this kind of opposition was what pushed Roosevelt into even considering something like a New Deal, knowing that if he didn't do something and release the pressure, he was going to get hammered, that the political options were going to be dreadful. Now, today it seems to me that the demand on the left for a new deal and focusing on Obama is really problematic, because it doesn't remember that history. That the history is that you get what you fight for only if you have the power to make sure that you can take it. So the point, and I think this is very hard for those of us who are sort of geographers or urban designers or architects or something like that, the point is you can't kind of design your way out of a crisis like this. You organize your way out of a crisis. I heard this woman who works for the Harlem Tenants Council once stand up with, you know, a group of activists who would have called themselves activists, younger folk in general, and she kind of just stood up and looked at them and said, "You call yourself an activist?" She said, "I'm not an activist, I'm an organizer." Right? And that, I think, was a very powerful kind of statement. That it was organization in the 1930s that pushed anything like the New Deal, and it's organization today that's going to push the kinds of ambitious projects, even relatively small scale when we're talking about national and the international context of united workers. But that's a start. And with the notion, with the idea of jumping scale, we don't just want socialism in one inner harbour complex or one park or whatever. With that idea of always jumping scale of demands and of possibilities and organising, it seems to me that the possibility is there to get the power that forces whatever kind of New Deal it is that we might want, as opposed to what might be visited upon us. Right now, of course, there are very few signs from the Obama administration that the mobilization that brought him to power will, with any support from the administration, be converted into a movement. And I think we have to be very serious about that and be very practical and very sober about the lost chance that's already happened in there. So, right, tough job, start at the bottom and you organize. That's what's going to make it. And again, I can only end as I began by celebrating the victories you've already had and looking forward to seeing this victory happen too. So
it's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to happen.